You are now tuned in to the Nancy Ruffin Show.
Welcome back to another episode of the Nancy Ruffin Show. It is your girl, Nancy Ruffin, and this is the podcast where we discuss all things from God, goals, and growth. And this week, I'm really excited because I am sitting and chatting with playwright and actor A.R. Garcia. He is an incredible artist, and he's also a personal friend. He is someone who I met years ago within, you know, the writers community in New York City. And since then, we have really created and cultivated an incredible friendship. So this week, I sit down with AR and we talk about his work as a playwright, as a writer. We talk about creating in the midst of a pandemic. We also discuss parenting. We talk about creating generational wealth as people of color, why it's important to do so. We talk about all of the events that happened in 2020. And we just really get into some really important conversation. And for me, these conversations, especially when they're with friends, are so much more meaningful because it never sounds like it's an interview. What it sounds like is just a conversation between old friends who have reconnected. And that was exactly what AR and I did. In fact, our conversation lasted for 2 hours. And for that reason, I've decided to split the interview up into two parts. So you will listen to part one today, and then next week, part two will air. So if you are not already subscribed to this show, shame on you, but this is your opportunity to go and subscribe so that you won't miss next week's episode when it drops. So with no further ado, when we come back, we're going to get right into the conversation with AR.
You are now listening to the one and only Nancy Ruffin.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Nancy Ruffin Show. And I'm really excited about today's guest. A.R. Garcia is an incredible writer. He's a playwright. He's an actor. I mean, this man is an artist in every sense of the word. And he's also a father. He's a grandfather. This man, I mean, he juggles so many things simultaneously, but all in all, he's just really an incredibly dope human being. And I am just super grateful that I get to call him a friend. So AR, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How have you been? We were just talking briefly, and the last time we saw each other had to be definitely much before the pandemic, right? So that was over a year ago. How have you been since then? Because we've been in living in almost an alternate reality is what I feel like.
Yo, I can't even believe that I met you in the Bronx, right?
Yes, it was during the work day. I was working and we ended up just meeting up for lunch.
We met up for lunch and shot the breeze and everything and caught up. And that was over a year ago. This pandemic has kept us apart.
Oh my God, everyone. Everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I've been good. I've been working, you know, and I've been maintaining just like everybody else. I think it's been really hard, you know. That's not no different for me, you know. This pandemic has been torturous, to say the least.
Yeah, I know that you recently moved, right? Like, did you just move? Like, how? Congratulations!
Thank you.
How has moving during a pandemic been?
You know what's crazy? This pandemic was like life changing for me.
Yeah, for everyone. I mean,
for everybody.
Some people, yeah. It was life-changing in a good way, because it kind of forced us to pause for a minute and to really think about what we want out of our lives, you know, to rest, because some people were just like on go and weren't resting. And then it has been, you know, not so good for other people. You know, it's been a huge time of loss, like in so many ways. But I wholeheartedly believe that, you know, when we lose things, like whatever it is, it just makes space, you know, for other things, for other blessings to find us. So talk about that. How has it been life-changing for you?
For me, you know, I believe I was in a space where it was, I had gotten into a space where everything was like routine, you know, like I was just, you know, I was in a nice flow. A couple of years ago, you know, I get out of a toxic marriage, you know, and things start to flourish. I start to go on tour with my play, like I get back into my artistry. But within that greatness, right, like I get into a routine, you know, and I kind of got comfortable in that routine. So I had found myself in a space where I was no longer moving any further. I wasn't moving backwards, but I wasn't moving any further. I wasn't evolving. I wasn't changing. And primarily because I was doing the same things. I was living out my dream, but with the same kind of model that I had in the past, right?
Yeah.
And although some of those techniques, some of those habits, you know, the good ones, right? Although they work, but sometimes they don't work for whatever next level in your life is going to be.
Yes.
And so I found myself still excelling, but with old habits.
With old habits, yeah.
And I had shed like a lot of toxic habits and a lot of, you know, but as far as business was concerned and as far as you know, how I wanted things to move, I found myself in the same space. And then the pandemic hit. And we had talked, and I was like, yo, I'm trying to do this, I'm trying to do that, but I feel like I can't get, you know, here. Yeah. And it's funny because the first thing that we do when we feel like we're stuck and we feel like we want to get to another level is, instead of looking inward, we look outward.
Yes.
And I even talked to you. I was like, look, I need help in this. I need help in that. Do you think you can, right? Like, cause we're friends. So if you need something, you could come to me, you know, I got you, and vice versa. So I was like, yo, I think I need help in this, then the third, without saying, bro, what is it that you need to do?
Yes.
In order to shift, right? So this pandemic hit and I found myself depressed. In the first 2 months,
I think that was true for everybody. Because
yeah, I mean, everybody, right? Like, I wasn't the only one.
It shocked us. We are not, listen, this one thing of being a person, you know, that likes to be home and you choose to be home, right? Versus you have to, you know, because your survival, your health, the health of your loved one, it was at that point, because we didn't know anything about COVID. We're operating initially out of this sense of fear, because it's always when you don't know, you're afraid. So it's like, well, I'm staying in and I'm not going out. And there, the depression does hit. So you were depressed those first 2 months.
I was out of it. And here's what I realized, right? I realized that the pandemic shone the light on a lot of liars.
Right? Yes.
Because there's a lot of... I curse because I'm like,
no, you can curse.
You know how,
yourself. First, I mean, listen, it ain't like this is going to show up on like network, you know, on channel 7.
It's been a long time. And, you know, I respect it. So I was like, hold up. I don't remember if I can curse on the show. And I felt like a lot of motherfuckers have been lying. Yeah. Right. So a lot of motherfuckers are like, I love to be home. And then all of a sudden, everybody's going crazy.
Right.
I found myself at home in my beautiful apartment, chilling. Me being stuck in my house wasn't depressing, right? Like right. That was when I say I'm, yo, the only reason you see me out here, here, and here is because I've been networking.
Right.
It has to do with my artistry, not because I'm like an introvert. I'm an extrovert, but I like to be home.
Like to be home.
The writer in me likes to be home. So that wasn't my problem. My problem was the uncertainty of what life had to come and where I fit in that space. How now could I create art? Mm. Right? Like how now do I create art, right? So 2020 for me was the year that I left my 9-to-5 career. Right? Because I was going on tour with She Hates Coffee. We had about 3 cities that we were working on, you know, yes, that we were setting up.
Mm-hmm.
I had 5 cities on lock. I was bringing back The Broken Bachelor. I had 5 cities on lock already.
Listen, I just have to say that is probably one of my favorite plays of yours.
Thank you.
And I don't know. I mean, definitely the story I love, but I think the fact that you are the actor in it, and so you bring a different element, one, because they're your words, you know, you wrote them and you know the level of emotion that goes behind every scene. Like, I loved it. I remember, you know, I went to see you, I think, Puerto Rican Traveling Theater. And yeah. I laughed, I cried. It like you took the audience through such a different range of emotions and it was so relatable and honest. You know, and I love all your work, but it's like, for me, I think because you were the star of that, it brought it to another level. So I'm happy that you were working on bringing it back, because
yeah, I so was. And what nailed it for me was that last year for my birthday, well, not this past birthday because it was during the pandemic, but the one before that, in 2019, I did The Broken Bachelor for my birthday after having done it in years. And then, so that solidified it with my producers, and we were like, okay, we're going to take it on the road. And we had locked down like 5 cities and we were negotiating 5 more cities. So I was going to be touring for like the rest of the year. She Hates Coffee. I was going to star in She Hates Coffee. We were going to do it in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and I was going to star in it in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And then from there, I was going to give it back to, you know, the other gentleman that plays it. And we were going to take it on tour. So, and I have another play and another film that we've been working on. I have another play that I cannot wait to show the world. It is my first Spanish and bilingual, like really strong. It's like 70% in Spanish, and it's called the, you know, I can't do that. No, you know what? It's you. So I'm gonna say it. The play's called The Secret Is in the Scenes.
I love that title.
Yeah, The Secret's in the Scene. And I have a powerhouse cast that is going to be in it. Anyway, so I had all of these things and I'm sitting in my apartment drinking like crazy, like everybody else, right?
Right.
You know, a bottle of whiskey a day, not knowing like, what are we going to do?
Right.
You know, about 2 months in, my grandson saves my life.
Mm. He's such a cutie. And yes. I love how much, I love that the way that you share your life, because you're so honest. And I think it's who you are, because you do it in your art and in your writing, but it's how you live your life. And you allow us to see all of these different aspects of your life. And I can see just from what you share, how he has changed your life. He yeah. stirs up this joy in you. So.
Yeah, man. I'm riding away. And then his mother says to me, you know, my son was still working. And his mother says, I have to go back to work. And my mom can't take care of him. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'll take care of him. I'm like, what else am I doing? I'm home all day. So she's dropping him off like every day at 6 a.m. And now, Nancy, I find myself taking care of this baby.
What an amazing grandpa you are. I can't even imagine dropping my kids now, as big as they are, like, to my father.
From 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Right? So then I realized that I can't drink, because the next day I got to take care of this little guy. Like, he comes in and then he's in my bed and he wants to talk. He wants to play. He is not beat. So he, you know, and then he's there every day. So I'm like, yo, I can't drink. I find myself like, I start working out and I get like a 6-pack in my 40s, you know what I'm like? Like, I'm on top of the world. You know, and I'm taking care of this baby. And, you know, he just changes my whole perception on life again. And he just brings this joy and this energy. And I taught him how to walk. I taught him how to eat solid foods. His first words were, "Papa." You know, so his mom and his dad were super pissed off at me. But hey, you know, I took care of him.
That's what happens, you know, when they're spending so much time with grandpa.
I took care of him through the whole pandemic. And you know, you know, I'm super private about my life. I've always been super private about my kids, super private about my love life. So I start to decide to share the kids and this baby, because he's so beautiful. And then he starts to get the wheels turning. And then I start to think outside the box, and I have She Hates Coffee on you know, digitally. Mm-hmm. And I never meant to use it to put it out or whatever. And I said, I'm gonna bring theater. I can bring theater.
Yes.
To people at home. Like, I can literally legit bring theater.
Yeah, because that was how I first saw She Hates Coffee. I was at home in my living room, you know, and it was a Saturday night, and I sat and I watched it.
Yeah, and I'm having a conference call with my boy, and he's like a digital media manager in LA. And he's like, yo, content is gonna be what's needed now. So whatever content you have, and I'm sitting there telling him, yo, I don't have no content. And he goes, you don't have that play on video? I was like, yeah. So we put it together and I put it out. Yo, and it becomes a thing. And here I am touching people again during a pandemic. And people are hitting me up like, oh my God, you know, me and my husband saw it, or me and my wife saw it, me and my girl saw it, you know, like, you know, and I was just like, okay, so there is a way. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that you have to do is find it. But what you can't do is sit here and fucking sulk.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Then George Floyd happens. Right? And I get super fucking like angry, you know. I mean, I had already been angry because, you know, I'm an Afro-Latino. Mm-hmm. I grew up around white people. And the only reason I was quote unquote liked was because I was an athlete growing up. And, you know, my parents, you know, my mother is the strongest fucking Latina I've ever met in my life. And she's been a successful business owner for forever. And my father also did well for himself. So, you know, I went to private school and, you know, I mean, not to sound whatever, but my parents had more money than some of those white people.
Yeah, right. So you had access. You,
right. So it was,
you were privileged, you know, so I know that there's a certain stigma with the word privilege, but I think that a lot of us, you know, in different ways have privilege. It's not always just wealth and money and monetary.
Right.
And if you go to school, you know, in a certain area, you know, you have access, you know, that is a certain level of privilege. And, you know, it's okay, you know, to recognize it. But then it's like, okay, how are you going to use your privilege? Right.
And so, exactly. And so it was like, how did you, so I grew up with them throwing like the little side jabs, right? But then they would come over to the house and it's like, we had a bigger house than them. So it, me recognizing those things quickly put me in a space to be like, you ain't better than me.
Right.
You ain't fucking better than me. So, you know, and my father used to say, I remember I caught myself saying, oh, we rich. My father said, espérate. Tu mamá y yo tenemos dinero. Tú eres pobre.
Spoken like a real Latino. Yeah. Yo, they will remind you real quick, like, you don't got anything.
You don't got shit.
We have.
I need that. We put you through school. We, you know, the cars are mine. The house is mine. I was like, damn, probably like, I thought this was us. Nah, when I say we, I mean me and your mother.
Yo, it's funny because I tell my kids that, like, I tell them that now. Like, they try to say that they have, I'm like, you have nothing, girlfriend. Like, this house is mine and your dad's. The beds that you sleep in, we let you sleep on, but those are our beds. Like, your room is my room. And they're looking at me like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, you have nothing yet, little girl. You got to work, you know, for what you're going to get.
Yo, I buy this house, right? And the kids, they love it. And my 9-year-old son, he's here with me. The grandbabies are here with me this weekend too. But my 9-year-old son, when he first gets here, so I bought an obscene amount of land, right? And I'm saying it like this, and I'm saying it proud, because I'm a fucking Latino and I work hard, and this is what we all should aspire to, right?
Absolutely.
So I buy this beautiful house. With the house comes 18.4 acres of land.
Wow.
Right? So this is like the first time I'm even mentioning it. Like, I post pictures of like the backyard.
Love it.
The backyard that I post is mine, right? But so
it's so important for other people of color to see what is possible. You know, so many of us, you know, grow up in environments where we don't see that. You know, and so when you have, you know, people on the outside looking in, they look at you, you know, an Afro-Latino, a man that looks like them, that speaks like them, you know, someone who hasn't, even with all your privilege, right, you still haven't had it easy. You still had to get up every morning. You have to go work. You got kids you got to take care of. You know what I mean? So the fact that you can share that and say, look, I did it. You know, it gives the next person just a little bit of hope. Like, yo, if I really commit to this, like, I can do the same thing or something similar.
And here's the thing, right? It's, you know, my family, they worked hard for everything that they had, right? It wasn't like they came here and anybody gave them anything. Right. Just like anybody, any one of our people, right? My parents came here when they were super young. My mom busted her ass, opened a business. It wasn't like, I left my mom's house and she had an IRA Roth or whatever that she was giving me. Like, my mom didn't hand me a check and change. She didn't Donald Trump me, right? Like, you know what my mom told me? You know what was my inheritance? My inheritance was go work hard.
So, but you know what? You know what I want to say? I think that that's true for many of us because our parents, when they started, had nothing, you know? And so often, kind of like with your parents, like, we can only, like, give our children, like, it's like white people, they pass down, you know, their wealth, but it's like after they die or, you know, after they've amassed, you know, millions and millions of dollars where you can establish trusts and hand that to your kids. And I know that for me, for the conversations that we have at my house with my family, we're always thinking about, well, how can we create things so that we can give our kids something so that when they start out in life, they're not starting out at zero. You know, like when I started out, when I left my parents' house, I was already in debt because I had to take loans out to go to school. you know, and I think that it's so true for a lot of us in our community that we start out in life with debt. And it's not, that's not always true for white people. Yeah. When white people start out, they start out with trust funds, or they can go to college and not worry about student loan debt because their parents are paying for it, you know, so they can graduate and they can get themselves, you know, into good jobs, into good careers. And they're starting off already, you know, ahead of us, you know. So the goal, at least for me, is I want to be able to create wealth, whether it's by, you know, home ownership, where I'm buying property that I can then gift to my children. So like, say, this is yours for you to start with, so that you're not starting out with debt, but instead you have something that is yours, you know? And so I think what you're doing—
That was my goal. That was my goal, right? And so we don't have that type of wealth, right? Like, you know, our parents didn't come here, you know, and have anything handed to them, right? And so my parents didn't hand me over anything, right? No wealth, no nothing, you know. What they did instill me was how to go get it, you know, how to go hustle. My mom was big on that. My mom called me in the morning, si yo podía trabajar, tú podías trabajar.
Right.
You know, and so what I try to instill in my children and pass down is, first and foremost, is knowledge, right? And the visual, you can do whatever you want to do, right? And buying this house and this property was really huge for me because I felt like it was going to set a precedent with my children, right? And my son, he, you know, I remember him coming out, and he comes out onto the deck and he goes, "Dad, all of this is, so this is all ours?" And I was like, "No." He goes, "Oh, I thought you said all of it." I said, and I did the same thing to my father. I said, "No, motherfucker, this is mine. I'm going to give you a little piece. I'm going to give you a little piece and see what you do with that." But no, like, the point was, if I have all of these kids and these grandkids, like, now I have this land that they can have and that they can inherit. I ain't getting rid of this. I don't have to necessarily stay here, but I get to keep this land in my family.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And I can pass it over to them. And if I don't do anything with it, they can.
Right.
Right. And I felt like that's the goal. You yes. know, okay, the house is beautiful, you know, and I have 5 bedrooms and 3, you know, but like, all of that's cool. Right. But if they want later on, they can demolish this shit and build something crazy or all live on the property. Like, they could do whatever they want to do.
Right.
And I felt like that was more important than anything else that I could do.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting back to the George Floyd thing, like, that shit killed me inside. And I was torn about going to the protests, and because I'm not taking care of this baby.
Yeah.
And, but then I also realized, like, most of these marches and these protests, this has to be powered and fueled by young people.
Yeah.
It's important. They have the strength, they have the numbers and the power. And what I need to do is be ready, willing to expose my wisdom, to expose my support, with my mind first, with my resources, and with my art. And I had this idea, and I create this, you know, I had been having these conversations about our flag and about how displaced I've always felt in this country and how different we are from white people. And how they have this innate feeling like this is theirs, but yes. We don't.
Yes.
I was born here and I don't feel like I belong here.
Right.
Yet I go to DR and there's a feeling, and I wasn't born in the Dominican Republic. And I go to Dominican Republic. Shit, I've been to Puerto Rico and felt the same thing and felt like I was actually home.
Yeah.
than to feel that in this fucking country where my mother birthed me, where my mother conceived me.
Right.
Right. And I don't feel that because the people around me, the people that I grew up with that don't look like me, have made it their life's mission. There's life's mission to
make you feel like a foreigner.
Make you feel like a man. Like a fucking foreigner.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling my daughters, I was saying, do you know what it is? I said, okay, we're Latino. We're not, you know, we're not African-American. I said, do you know what it is? The nerve of some of these white people to say, go back to your country, to black people, to Latinos. And I'm like, first of all, we were in our country chilling. Right. You know what the nerve of motherfuckers to enslave a whole people, bring them here, treat them like shit for forever, enslave them all over again. Then act like they don't want them here.
Right.
We didn't ask to be here.
Well, the thing is, they only want you when they can tell you what to do. Now, you know, you want to be independent, you want to be free, you want to think for yourself, you want, you know, to build for your family. Now for them, it's like, oh, they're taking what is ours, right?
And everything that they didn't build,
right?
That they didn't, you know. And I keep replaying these conversations. Then George Floyd happens and Breonna Taylor happens. And I'm like, and somebody says to me, something about the American flag. And I said, that banner, I've never felt like that banner has represented me at all. I said, and that banner comes from another banner, from a Confederate banner that was legitimately what racism stands for. And then I get this idea to create a banner of my own. And so I create this, I get into a whole new artistry that I never thought that I would ever. And I create this American flag, but which is what I'm wearing right here.
And I make that from like materials, wood. Right? Like,
yeah.
Like I saw like wood and
yeah. So it's
incredible.
So the banner has like 13 stripes, right? So I took 13 8-foot planks of wood, right? So the flag itself is the flag. The original flag is 8 feet by 4.5 feet wide. It's a monstrosity, and I build the flag and on it I put what it says in the Constitution, how all men are created equal, but it doesn't say that, you know. It says how all white men are created, you know, equal, you know, endowed by their white Jesus. And I then on this side has the poem of the Statue of Liberty, where it says, bring me your tired, bring me your whatever. And then right under it, it says, keep out Mexicans, right? Because they're trying to build a wall. And I have Marcus Garvey down here you know, and some other stuff. And then this reef to represent the 13 stars of the colonies, right? But instead it's a cotton reef with blood on it. And so it's real cotton. And I build this monstrosity and then I post it. And oh, they get mad at me. They get mad at me.
But that's what powerful art does. Right. Isn't that wanted to stir up emotion? And sometimes when people are afraid of the truth, people don't like to hold the mirror up to themselves. And I think that that is what artists in the history of this country, you know, have done, you know, through all of the major periods. That's when like really amazing art is created, because it's a reflection of the times, and people don't want. They don't want that in their face as a reminder of all of the shit that is happening.
And they got mad at me, right? Because it says America with the KKK on it. And I even had somebody say, how dare you put the KKK on the flag? I said, well, how dare white people have KKK in America?
Right.
Like, I'm just putting up your mirror, right?
Right. You didn't create it. You're not the leader of the KKK. It's part of our history.
It's a part of American history.
Right.
Like people, and it's great because I love to see this, right? Like people say, oh, Black History Month is not a thing for me. Because I feel like, oh, you just like Latino History Month. Like, I'm glad we have those things, right? Because we should be recognized. But it's like, we're the hardest working, Blacks and Latinos are like the hardest working people in America. And you give us a month, and then all they want to do is highlight
the atrocities
that have happened. Oh, like slavery, and that's Black. No, that's not Black history. That's white history.
Right.
That's American history, right? Like, you want to put, you know, for the month of, what is it, September through October, for that month, you want to...
We don't even get, like, the straight month, right?
Half
of September, half of October.
like, we're our own, like, astrology sign, right? Like, mm-hmm. like you know,
right.
And it's bullshit. Like, I'm not saying don't celebrate it. I'm saying it's bullshit what they're doing. Right, because
the thing is, you know, when they do that AR, the perception that it gives is that our contributions, you know, only happened like as a small portion of the history of this country, where in fact we are just as integral to the development of this country as white people. Like, there should not be, we shouldn't just get these months to recognize us when we are a part of the entire history of the country.
More.
Right.
We're more yes. integral. Listen, yes. If every Black and Latino worker said, we taking the day off, this country would not function.
You're absolutely right.
If during Latino Heritage Month, every Latino in this country, everyone from a senator to an orange picker,
right,
said, I'm taking the day off, this country would not function at all.
Right.
At
you're right. All.
The hospitals would be paralyzed. The entertainment industry would be paralyzed.
The service industry would be paralyzed. That right there would, you know, paralyze the entire country, because it's services where it is, you know, in our
we would collapse the economy
right
immediately. Yeah. Right. So what you're saying is, you giving us this half a month bullshit to just so you guys could feel special. We take care of your children, we service, we give you all of the ideas, like, we are so integral, right? And so I create these flags. I created about two so far. I got another three that I'm working on. I created one that said America. I created one that says capitalism. I didn't even think that this was going to be possible, but my boy Charlie Vargas, he ended up acquiring it from me, my second flag. Like, I didn't even get to like post it until he had already bought it. And I'm super proud. Like, he also has a podcast, and he has it and behind him and during his podcast. But and then from that, I write this sort of like essay, and I put it out, and it was called "I Am Not Okay," and it was just me expressing my frustration about what was going on. I turned that and people start hitting me up about these short film and these play submissions. Oh, you should get into these competitions. So I write it as a play, and I write it, I turn that essay into a play. And then I submit it into this play competition. And then I see the short film competition. I've never run a short film competition. So I take the same play and I convert it into a screenplay, and I entered it into a short film competition. I didn't win either of them. And then I said to myself, I find myself bummed again, right? And I said to myself, Nancy, I said to myself, Nancy, motherfucker, what is you bummed about?
Right.
You produced your own shit. Why did you even put your shit in somebody else's hands?
Right.
So I did what I know how to do best. I called up my team. I said, man, fuck these, you know, places and businesses and short film fucking festivals. I said, we're gonna do this ourselves. Right? And I talked to my producers. They read the script and they're like, how much? Let's do it. And I put this amazing, you know, I put this amazing cast together. I reached out to Suleika Velasquez, who's a Dominican director, very talented, very, very talented woman. And she read the script and was like, AR, I'm on board. And the film is about these five guys that get arrested during the George Floyd protests. And instead of, because the jails are overpopulated during this time, they end up putting them in a precinct, in the basement of a precinct. And the film is centered around Latinos and how they view themselves as Black or not as Black.
Mm.
And so it's these five men is comprised of three Latinos, one white man and one Black guy. And that's, the conversation is centered around this Afro-Latino, you know, claiming and acknowledging, you know, his African ancestry, while, you know, the other Latino is kind of like,
I ain't Black,
probably. We ain't Black, you know. And the conversation continues as you know, the Black man is kind of like, oh, now you guys want to be Black, you know, and this white guy in there, of course, just, you know, you don't know whether he's pro-Trump or not pro-Trump, or, you know, you don't know where his, but he's just kind of fed up with all of the bullshit, right? And then you have another Latino that kind of comes in and throws a monkey wrench. And I just, because it's been a conversation that happens in my own family, you know, and just watching some of, you know, some family members that will accept, you know, that, you know, we have part of us that have African roots, and then some of them that just don't accept it. And that's a real thing in our community. And so I wanted that conversation and I wanted to exploit it. You know, I wanted to put us on blast for the reality of the conversations that we have, right? Because it's really easy to be on social media and be like, you know, but we don't share how maybe you and the family are like this, and your sister's like, you ain't Black. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah, I listen. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about, because it's true. I think that is true for a lot of Latino families. You know, there's always, I always say, there's always like a woke one, and then there's always like somebody's like, well, you ain't Black. You know, because the conversations, not the conversations, but the education never really happened, you know, and especially when you're thinking, kind of going back to what you were saying, being born in this country, attending the schools that we attend, you know, history is never honest. The way that they teach history is never honest, you know, so we're fed this watered down version of history. And then there's always like a group who kind of just goes with the flow. They learn what they learn and they internalize it and they believe it and they grow up to not question anything. It's just what they've been taught. And then there's another group of us who, as we get older and start having certain experiences, and we're like, wait a minute, like this is not exactly what we've been taught about ourselves. And we start to question what we've been taught, and then we educate, right? Because the education about who we are, about our ancestors, about the true history, those are not the things that we're taught. And if we want to learn that, we have to educate ourselves on that. And I always think that shows up in different ways in families. So you have the ones who just kind of go with the flow. And then you have the ones who take it a step further and say, well, wait a minute, I really want to learn about my history, you know, and not just American history and the way that it is taught to us in our schools.
So that wraps up part one of my interview with AR Garcia. Make sure that you tune in next week for part two. Thank you for being here. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, if you felt inspired, if you felt motivated, or if anything at all resonated with you, make sure to share. Share with your friends, share with your network, post your favorite quotes, tag us, all of that good stuff. I thank you so much for lending me your ears, as you do every week. And until next time, mi gente, go out there and crush those goals.
Thank you for listening to the Nancy Ruffin Show.